And now the rediscovery of a lost Inca city. In 1912, American explorer Hiram Bingham stumbled upon the remains of what he described as an Inca castle. And though castle, though it might be, he paused just long enough to note its existence before hurrying off to make his name at nearby Machu Picchu. Yactapata, as the ruins came to be called, remained relatively unexplored until a British-American team picked up the scent with aerial infrared photography earlier this year. In London last week, the expedition leaders announced that the site is much more substantial than Bingham had realized. Broad plazas, temples, an astronomical observatory, and a network of buildings suggest it was an important religious center intimately tied to Machu Picchu. But did the team actually find anything new? In a commentary posted on Archaeology Magazine's website, executive editor Mark Rose has taken issue with the expedition and its findings. And for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about the ruins of Yactapata, as well as the high-tech tools used to locate them, and the politics surrounding their, quote, rediscovery. So if you'd like to talk about archaeology this hour, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Dr. Gary Ziegler is an archaeologist with Adventure Specialists in Westcliff, Colorado, and co-leader of the Yactapata Expedition, and he joins us from his office there. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Ziegler.
Thanks, Ira. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Dr. Mark Rose is the executive editor of Archaeology Magazine here in New York, and is here today in our Science Friday studios. Welcome to the program, Dr. Rose.
Thank you.
Dr. Ziegler, you were not the first to visit Yactapata, correct?
That's correct, Tom.
Hiram Bingham made the discovery. Give us a little bit of the history there.
Well, history goes back to 1912 or so. Hiram Bingham conducted a series of exploratory expeditions throughout the surrounding area around Machu Picchu shortly after he found Machu Picchu. And in one of those sorties that he sent out, he sent a party up what's now known as the Ahubamba Canyon, which is very close to Machu Picchu. And the party was turned back. I guess, you know, it's quite difficult terrain today as it was then. Hiram Bingham himself, a few weeks later, actually found his way up onto the ridge, climbed up to the top, headed up into the high country, visited several ruins along the way. One of them he called Yactapata. And this was the site that he had camped at one night, spent about 5 hours there, did a rough drawing, took a few compass bearings, and then moved on up to look at another larger site quite high up called Palkai. And since Bingham's time, there have been several groups back through the area that we know. I'm sure there are others. One thing I should say about Peru is that really no one discovers anything. That Every site has been visited at one time or another since the Incas have left, or the pre-Incas, by local people, by prospectors, treasure hunters, herders, you name it. So when I say something hasn't been visited or hasn't been discovered, I'm talking about by the scientific community or some outside person who would document it, study it, or report it.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Hugh Thompson, the co-leader of your expedition, was there in 1982, correct?
That's right. He was, as a young graduate student, he was working with Ann Kendall's Kusichaka project, and he and another associate, David Drew, were doing a series of explorations, investigations throughout the area. And they actually came through the site of Yactapata, and at that time they were looking for Bingham's Yactapata. They diagrammed just part of a small group. They found a few other structures, and then they passed on up into higher up into the high country to Palkai.
Mm-hmm. And so this has been, well, I mean, but even people going up past it recently just passed it by, didn't really stop to do very much.
And that includes myself.
Well, why? So, when you get there and you see it, is it hard to recognize it? I mean, you say it's not worth looking at. If I saw something, I'd say, hey, let's take a look. You know?
Well, let me give you a bit of background, I think, of why no one has been interested in Yactapata and why the extent of Yactapata has never been fully realized, or that these other sectors that we have identified. I hate to use the word discovery, since I know you don't like it. But how many ways can you say find or locate?
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, there are a number of other sites in there other than the Bingham site that were not previously identified before our expedition. But coming back to your original question, is that one of the problems is a type of architecture that I call Vilcabamba style. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with the geology of the area. Machu Picchu sits on a granite batholith, which produces this wonderful small crystalline white granite, which is very readily shaped into polygonal and wonderful bossed corner building stones by the pecking method. Well, even though Yaktapata is only 2 miles away, it's part of an older metamorphic formation, which is the formation of most of that part of the Andes in Vilcabamba. And it's composed of a rather fragile, compressed early metasediments, which have been shaped into horizontal layers of sandstones and shales and quartzites. And to shorten up the story here, what happens with that is when you try to shape it, it just breaks into other slabs. Hmm. So the Incas then were forced to come up with a different style of architecture than Machu Picchu. So they stacked up these slabs. They were able to work some wonderful corners and doorways where they put their best efforts, which did have rounded corners of quartzite. But what they did to compensate, because here's a rather crude-looking building and wall, was they plastered it over inside and out. And there are also examples of this at Machu Picchu on some of the less high-status structures, as well as buildings through up and down Sacred Valley.
So when you see all that plaster, you don't think there's much there to look at.
Well, in Inca days, it would have looked something like a Santa Fe Pueblo.
Uh-huh.
And it apparently was painted in various, what looks like pastel colors. We've seen light oranges and rose-colored.
Mm-hmm.
But in modern-day times, after 4 centuries or whatever of weather and vegetation, it looks like the architecture looks like crudely stacked stonework. Because the plaster now is long gone except for a few remnants and isolated niches and corners.
I see. Mark Rose is executive editor of Archaeology Magazine. What do you make of their rediscovery or their discovery of the site?
Well, let me make it clear that it sounds like the site is important. It sounds like they went there and mapped it, and that's all to the good. My concern is the way it was reported, and I don't want promoted's not the right word, but the way publicity was generated about it. I'm glad to hear Dr. Ziegler say, in a public forum like this, that his co-leader, Hugh Thompson, had been there in 82. And in fact, Thompson published a book last January about his rediscovery of the site. So when the Royal Geographical Society put out its press release, which was picked up worldwide, people thought that the infrared camera work was what was responsible for this rediscovery, and I think that needs to be clarified as well. And hopefully Dr. Ziegler can do that. So I don't want to diminish the value of their work at the site, but I think they made it sound as if remote sensing was key to the discovery or rediscovery, and it wasn't. And the rediscovery was, in fact, over 20 years ago, not this year.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. 1-800-989-TALK if you'd like to talk about it. Let's talk about some of the techniques that archaeologists use. With the high, you don't think of archaeology as being high-tech. You think of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Harrison Ford going down there in his leather jacket and with his whip and whatever and looking for ancient civilizations. Dr. Ziegler, tell us about the remote sensing device that you use to help rediscover this area.
Well, we used a handheld thermal camera. There are a number of them on the market, and they're getting quite sophisticated these days. And we used it from a light aircraft, and had quite a few problems with it. This was what we think was probably the first use of it in the Andes, certainly. It's been used in Costa Rica and the American Southwest at other sites and with a similar technique. But using this camera, we overflew several areas of the Vilcabamba. Yaktapata was just one of our goals. I should say that this project is part of an ongoing project over a period of years, mm-hmm. in which we have systematically been exploring other areas of the Vilcabamba. You may recall that we located an Inca site last year called Cotacoca. So part of our thermal imaging plan was to study other areas of the Vilcabamba while we had the grant and while we had the aircraft and the camera. So we did look at a number of other sites, and then we found ourselves in an unfortunate weather window, which is one of the really big limitations of using this from the air in the Andes, is that the optimum use of thermal imaging, and I should just back up a second and say something for our listeners about how this works, is that the thermal camera measures the heat differential between various objects, in this case on the ground. And if sunlight hits a cloud forest, or in this case, tropical vegetation hillside, various objects on that hillside will retain different degrees of heat. And if you have a stone formation underneath the vegetation, theoretically, it should have a different heat signature from the vegetation above it. Mm-hmm. So the limitation and the question is how what's the penetrating depth of the thermal imaging camera? And of course, we're being swept up and down in a light plane, and sometimes we were close and sometimes we were far away. But we were able to find shapes. And I should go back just a second to what we were saying about the press release. And there is a misconception there, and I apologize for the ambiguous language. We didn't intend to convey that we found Yaktapata by thermal imaging. Yaktapata was a contributing factor to the project, and that we did find a number of other. And we don't. I say find. I'm not sure because I'm sitting on about 2 hours of basically unexamined data here that we're waiting for a long snowy winter to go through.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I want to get past the politics of all of this and
sure.
Claims and whatever, and talk about, maybe I can ask Mark Rose to talk about other times when other imaging, what kinds of other imaging and the kinds of high-tech techniques can you use? How about satellites? Can you find stuff from satellites? Can you find stuff from radar? Or what kind of stuff can you use?
Well, I think from my research that satellite is the optimum. The problem is expense and being able to target the satellites. We had actually talked to NASA and the two commercial satellites, they're called QuickBird and Iconus, about targeting specific areas. And there are some archived satellite images available of these areas. But unfortunately, there's almost nothing of this part of the Andes. And again, mm-hmm. It comes back to this problem of almost perpetual cloud cover.
I understand. Dr. Rose, what about other places that have been successful use of these satellites or whatever?
Yeah, space-borne radar is one of the best ways to go about it, and there have been some. You can actually look at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory website and see some of the images that have been gotten. They're very striking ones of the Great Wall in China, where this is north central China, west of Beijing, where you can pick out very clearly the wall from the Ming Dynasty about 600 years ago. Nice continuous. It's the one that you see. Mm-hmm. But in the image, you can see discontinuous sections of an earlier wall during an earlier dynasty that's about 900 years before the current Great Wall.
Hmm.
It's a very striking image.
Let me just remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.
Also, you can look at it at that website, is Angkor in Cambodia. Just striking image of Angkor Wat and the other temple complexes there. You pick out the buildings, the large reservoirs and moats and so forth. And that's a case where using the radar, which you can get through the vegetation with, they were able to identify areas that they did not realize were built up.
Mm-hmm.
And they found earlier hydrological works, canals, reservoirs, and that's all being used to study the development of the site and how it lasted over time.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. It's amazing that you're still finding stuff. This is the 21st century. Do you think there are any more things to be found out there?
I think there's a lot more to be found, particularly in this area of the Vilcabamba. The reason this area is so unique, again, is because of the cloud forest vegetation up high, the extremely steep terrain, and very little habitation. Mm-hmm. Just recently, I think it's been in the last 7 or 8 years that we've had the new topo maps available. Before that time, we were working with virtually the same maps that Hiram Bingham had.
Mark Rose, there's a lot to discover?
Yeah, there is. Let me just try and broaden things a little bit, though. Ira, one of the leaders in this field has been a guy named Tom Seaver, an archaeologist.
Not the baseball pitcher.
This is the Tom Seaver who works for NASA, and he's pioneered a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is, I apologize for reading this quote. It's quick, though. Seaver says, the stereotype has archaeologists just digging up spearheads and pottery, anthropologists just writing down the words of primitive tribes. But we're examining how people adapted to their environment through time, how they experience environmental shift, why cultures come and go. Soils associated with artifacts are as important as the artifacts themselves, probably more relevant to us than the actual objects. Now more than ever, archaeological research is interdisciplinary. Botany, forestry, soil science, hydrology, all of which contribute to a more complete understanding of the Earth, climatic shifts, and how people adapt to large regions. This understanding is critical to future decision-making affecting the planet. And Seaver's point there is it's not just going out and finding lost cities or not really lost cities or individual sites. We're not even looking at a single home, village, or even a large city. We need to look at the complete landscape because people modify their landscape, they adapt to their landscape. It's key.
And this is very similar to astronomers who used to look at the planets in the solar system, and then now that we've discovered the planets, we now send specialists there. We send water hydrologist specialists, the kinds of stuff we do here on Earth. We send geologists, we send, people who will get up close and dirty with it, and that's the same thing you're saying here. You're no longer just digging with the tools looking for the spearheads. You don't have to send the specialists out.
And there's another tool that's being used. There are a lot of different varieties of remote sensing, but there's another tool called Geographic Information System. And basically, it's a database management sort of thing where you can build up layers of information about the landscape from the contours to the vegetation to the geology to what sites are there. You can plug in your satellite imagery, and you get the whole package. It's a holistic approach.
We're talking this hour about archaeology with my guests, Dr. Mark Rose, executive editor of Archaeology Magazine here in New York, Dr. Gary Ziegler, archaeologist with Adventure Specialists in West Cliff, Colorado, and co-leader of the Yaktapata Expedition. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones to, is it Ratan in Minneapolis?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm actually from Boulder, Colorado, and Dr. Ziegler, I wanted to ask you, I heard mentioned that there are a number of sites, and I've hiked some of those sites around Machu Picchu, and it seems that we continue to discover more and more, or maybe not discover, but find or acknowledge the existence of different communities. And I wondered if you had a feel for how many communities, or was there a whole infrastructure of communities around Machu Picchu, and how that lifestyle connected them, if there was.
I think there was a large community of probably workers and others in agricultural zones, for instance, along the river bottoms, along the Urubamba River, and up the side canyons in the Santa Teresa Canyon, where people are still growing crops today, and we would have very little real archaeological evidence of that today. Many of these people, we found this elsewhere in the Vilcabamba, lived in wood-sided houses. So that we would not be able to actually calculate the size of the population. Most of the sites that we see around Machu Picchu are ceremonial. Those were the wonderful stone buildings, like the whole series of sites on the Inca Trail coming into Machu Picchu, Wini Winu being probably the most interesting and most important site. Then there's the large site, which also has the confusing name of Yaktapata, that our British archaeologist colleague Ann Kendall has worked on so long at the start of the Inca Trail. And this was, Ann Kendall suggests, was a community supporting Machu Picchu.
So Machu Picchu was sort of a hub then for a series of communities around there?
And that's our opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that part of our study, indicated by the Inca road coming in from the west, very similar to the Inca road to the east, is that Machu Picchu was no longer a dead end, as many people have thought for years, but was actually sort of the center of several roads coming in and communities spreading out in various directions. But to kind of finish answering your question, the limitation of the area of having any large towns or settlements up on the mountainside was just by the steepness of the terrain. There were very few places with enough space available to build sizable communities.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go around the country. Let's go to James in Memphis. Hi, James.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest if any resources were allocated to preserve the site. Now that the discovery has been published, there exists a real threat of looters there. All too often, sites of this nature are discovered and publicized. They're quickly desecrated and looted.
Hmm. Mark Rose, is this typical of what goes on? What's a site? Do people from around the world want to go trample it, see it, take pieces, you know?
Well, that happens. Sites and artifacts of different cultures sort of come in and out of style, and it has to do with being publicized. And sometimes that can even be a museum exhibit that triggers it. There's a big exhibit, and then people say, oh, this is neat stuff, and it builds a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
So publicity for a site before there's adequate protection can be problematic.
Gary Ziegler, is there any protection? Or, I mean, it's not an easy place to get to, is it?
Well, unfortunately, it's quite easy to get
to. Is
it?
It is.
It's very close to the end of the railroad in Machu Picchu and several sizable communities in the nearby Santa Teresa Valley. And as we mentioned in our report, there are several trails coming up from the valley below. There are several cornfields planted. And we found evidence of looting in almost all of the sectors. And some of it was quite recent.
Hmm.
But as far as protection goes, of course, looting is illegal by law in Peru, but the reality is that this is an isolated area. There's no real enforcement. The only enforcement, and this is what we hope can be brought about, is to broaden the Machu Picchu Historical Sanctuary, which is a national park, to encompass Yactopanta.
Mm-hmm. Is that James? Answer your question? Well, he's gone. 1-800-989-8255. For those of us who don't know what Machu Picchu and the whole area is, give us a little bit of a thumbnail history of what that site means and how do you put it in perspective with Mexico and the rest of Latin America and Central America and South America.
I'm sorry, was that question?
Yeah, Gary, can you do that?
I'm sorry. restate that for me.
If people are not familiar with Machu Picchu and the site Yactopacta, the area, give us a little historical perspective of why it's important in the history of culture of South America and Latin America.
Well, Machu Picchu is particularly important because it was sort of the crown jewel of the Inca Empire, and probably, and this is expressing my opinion, the most impressive archaeological site in the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
Because of its location and architecture in combination with the mountains and the rivers and all, and this whole setting in the Vilcabamba. But putting it in perspective to the Inca Empire, it was probably relatively insignificant. What we believe was that it was a royal estate. I think this is what most scholars would agree on today. It was a royal estate built by the Emperor Pachacuti. And this was at the height of expansion of the Inca Empire. The Incas actually were around on a very short time period.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of contemporary to the Aztecs in Mexico. The Maya civilization was long gone. But here we have this very important site in the Americas. and only because of its, probably because of its architecture and its setting.
Mm-hmm. Do we have relics from this period, and might there be undiscovered relics in this rediscovery of Yoctepata?
Well, Bingham's expeditions spent about 3 or 4 years working at Machu Picchu with extensive excavations. There have been a number of people who worked there since. I think, if I recall, Julio Citeo, I believe the great early Peruvian archaeologist, may have done some excavations there. There have been any number of unsung local Peruvian archaeologists working with projects. There's a large collection, as we all know, at the Yale University of both skeletal remains and various things, bronzes, ceramics, that the Bingham expedition brought out and put into storage. And since that time, in a series of more recent studies, the Burgers, who are the curators of that collection, I believe, have done some studies at Machu Picchu. Johann Reinhardt, who we know, most recently for his wonderful discoveries of Juanita and the ice mummies, has done considerable work at Machu Picchu, not in excavation, but in terms of interpretation. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably missing a number. There were certainly astronomers. David Dearborn and Brian Bauer have all done work there. And what this does is this gives us an accumulation of knowledge that we can build on with any new data that comes in from some new investigation or study, such as ours.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to the phones. David in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to Science Friday. David.
Hi. 2 points. One is with regards to the global change, I do a lot of lecturing on climate change. There's a book called El Nino and the Fate of Civilizations that's pretty good on the influence of climate change on the effect of the Maya and speculations about other civilizations and climate change. So I wanted to make a point there. Mm-hmm. The other question was, I have always been intrigued by a Landsat satellite photograph taken around the Peru-Brazil border, I guess in the late 70s, that was put out in Childress's book, Lost Cities of South America, which is, obviously a little bit on the fringe, but the photograph of the Landsat satellite is there, and it shows the presence of some fairly sophisticated pyramidal structures. And I was wondering if anybody has ever looked into that, and what if anybody has done any work in with regards to that photograph and, mm-hmm. and that site per se.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Mark, Gary?
The answer is yes. That's been looked at by several different groups and numbers of individuals, and the consensus is that those are geological formations, some limestone hills.
Does it have to do with the theory about the pharaohs and the South Americans being the same culture idea, David? He's gone. You could hear about that a lot in the fringe journals of archaeology.
Yeah, that's.
And I can see you're wincing when you have to talk about that, Gary.
Yes.
And Mark, I see you too. You get a lot of people who want to make these connections. I mean, just because, why? I mean, they think it's too hard to believe these could have been separate, these kinds of cultures at the same time, or
in some cases it's sort of a colonial mindset almost. It's saying that the people on Easter Island could not have made these statues on their own, so you have to figure out how to get people from Egypt across North Africa in your reed boat. Then you have to get that reed boat over to the Americas and build some pyramids there to link it all together. And then you have to go on a balsa raft from South America out to Easter Island to complete the chain. And it's a very colonial attitude saying that, well, these people couldn't possibly do it. We have to link them back to the old country.
Hmm. Gary, any comment?
I like to say that the human mind thinks in similar patterns. And we all think about geometric things, pyramids, common mathematics, squares, rectangles, and it's quite logical for someone to conceive of a pyramid in Egypt as well as a pyramid in Peru.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the minute or two left we have, where do you go from here, Gary? Do you go back? Do you do more exploration? What's happening?
Well, we hope to continue doing this as long as we're physically able. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of X's on the topographic map, and certainly we'd like to see more study done at Yautepata and be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to get the go-ahead from the government there to do that?
We do. We work closely with what's called the National Institute of Culture, and permits are required and careful coordination.
Mark, let me ask you what I call a cafeteria question. Where in the world do you I'll give you the blank check question. I give it to a lot of scientists. If you had a blank check and you could study something anywhere in the world as an archaeologist, where would you like to go?
Where would I like to go?
What needs to be studied and is crying out? That's
well, there's a big sort of fist fight now over the Amazon. And what's going to happen? Well, what happened there? Mm-hmm. Is it a pristine landscape? Was it highly cultivated, thickly populated, or not? That's a question that needs to be answered there and in, say, Guatemala, where there's a lot of deforestation going on. A lot of Maya sites can be lost if they're not taken care of now. That's where some of this remote sensing stuff comes into play. You can monitor what's going on at sites and protect them.
So you could use the money to protect the sites.
Yep.
From exploitation.
Yeah. Don't need to find more. Protect what you got.
Okay, that's a good place to stop. I'd like to thank my guests, Mark Rose, executive editor of Archaeology Magazine in New York, Gary Ziegler, archaeologist with Adventure Specialists in West Cliff, Colorado, and co-leader of the Yautepata expedition. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you, Ira.
Thank you.
Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Vinn. As I say, if you missed any of the links we talked about today, if you want to know how to see some of these sites, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We have the links up there. Also, we have free curricula that we make from Science Friday. We give it away to students, teachers, anybody who would like to use it in their classroom. Also, if you missed back editions of Science Friday, it's there in real audio, or you could download them, subscribe on your audible.com player. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatto in New York.